presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us on this Wednesday hump day, February 1st, 2023. Todd Lebo's birthday. And last night, the Sunflower Showdown, part two. Kansas wins 90-78 over Kansas State. We have Nick Leckie in studio. Nate, you said you'd talk trash to Nick when he got here. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you like those apples, Leckie?
He's setting you up. He's setting you up. You know, I mean, gosh, they're defending national champions. It's awesome. I just love the people clout chasing and saying all this stuff, like, we didn't storm the court. Like, why would you? You're the defending national champions. You know, it's like, it's mind-blowing to me. Like, I don't like Twitter because it's whining and complaining. And it's like dunking on, or it's blaming the refs. It's like, that's not
bitching and moaning.
And I can't stand it. Like, I apologize if you reach out to me. It's toxic. I don't want to get toxic. It's a tool, but why does my feed, after Elon took over, my feed's terrible. The For You page, like, it's so bad. I'm like, I don't follow this one financial lady. I don't follow a lot of people. I'm like, why are they keep in my feed?
Yeah, you got to go to the following thing so you just see the people that.
Yeah, but even then, they complain a lot.
Well, that's true.
Am I the old man now?
No.
Look.
I just did exactly what I was doing.
But you know what you can find on Twitter? Video of Travis Kelce eating wheel pizza ranking it in front of college kids.
What'd he give it?
Fantastic. Should we play it again for him? Because have you ever had wheel pizza, Nick?
I honestly have not.
You haven't?
No, I have not. No. I've been to Lawrence several times and enjoyed Mass Street, right?
Yep.
And everything that's affiliated with it. I love Lawrence. Like, I just love going there and drinking with people and hanging out. And I absolutely love Lawrence. Lawrence is a fantastic place. I love it.
So here's Travis Kelce. First of all, the guy that's recording the video is calling him the greatest of all time, but then they want him to rank the pizza barstool style after one bite. And you got to listen to the end because there's a good qualifier that he gives.
That's all time! That's all time! That's all time!
All time, bro!
What we think?
Hey, how's it
going? Hey, what we
think? What we think?
What we think?
You know the rules.
I'm a little tipsy. It's about a 9. It's a solid 9.
Oh, yeah! Hey, let's go.
Give me 6 more beers. It might be a 10.
We're all just fat kids. He should have gave it a 9.0, though, in true Barstool fashion, right?
Like, yeah.
That's yeah.
He was a little tipsy by his own admission.
I like that. That's cool, man. Just vibing. I like how they're able to just to chill and hang out. You know, on a go take a great sporting event like that.
So, you've played in a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
The first couple days after you win the conference championship, you get a little downtime. You get to go out, and let your hair. How long do you get to celebrate before you get back to the lab or whatever you call it?
Wednesday. Today's your work day. Today's your first work day, and this is the hardest part of your 2 weeks. Because, you know, you're finally, like, today is when you're, like, you get the scouting report. You go over, like, who you're playing, what the ratings are, and you start practicing for them, right? You start practicing for the Eagles. And then once you get to Arizona, the hay is in the barn. It's, like, the least nervous I've ever been for a game is the Super Bowl. Like every game I'm a ball of nerves so you get that first hit. When you're in a Super Bowl, you're like, let's just play this damn thing. I've been playing since August. I'm ready to play this thing. We've had 2 weeks to prepare. I'm over it. Like, let's just play this thing. Let's get on the road. So no nerves on Super Bowl, which is really weird.
Okay, before we get more into the Super Bowl, I want to ask you about your former head coach that you played for when you won the Super Bowl, Sean Payton. He now officially is going to the Denver Broncos to be their next head coach. The Broncos are trading a first-round pick in 2023 and a second-round pick in 2024 for the Saints, 2024 third-round pick, and Sean Payton. Apparently, according to Ian Rappaport, the Broncos were chasing DeMeco Ryans And then they tried to work a deal out in secret with Jim Harbaugh. And then they yesterday, according to Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, went after DeMeco Ryans again and tried to convince him to be coach. And he decided to stick with the Texans. And so then the Broncos said, screw it. And they traded a first and a second round pick to the Saints for Sean Payton. Let's start with this first question. Is Sean Payton worth a first round pick to become head coach of the Denver Broncos if you're Denver?
100%. I absolutely think so. I mean, Sean has – he won with Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill. You know, so if – and then that defense was pretty good in New Orleans. But I think Sean's a quarterback whisperer. You know, I think he's seen Russell enough to know what he can do and can't do. And he's a coach who's gonna bring an offense to match those that skill set. And it's a really scary process for us here in the AFC West that, you know, Denver's going to be legit on offense because they just look feckless on offense this year. It was you hate to see it, right? Or you love to see it, however you shake on the Denver. But I think it's a great move. Plus, if you're Sean, you know, you can you know, carve a new lane in a place with a home field advantage, a beautiful place to live in Denver, and you can resurrect Russell's career. Which I think is a great opportunity for him, and he's one of the few guys who can do it. You know, he really is, and I think they're going to have some good relationship.
I mean, that's the question, though. How far gone is Russell Wilson? Was it just the fact that Nathaniel Hackett was in over his head, and the coaching and the game plans weren't good enough, and there was incompetence around him? Is that why Russell Wilson looks so bad, or is this part physical as well? Seattle said, you know what? We're getting off this train before it wrecks. And maybe they, because people suggested they felt like he was a declining player and they're no dummies and they made the move at the right time. And you see Geno Smith ended up out playing Russell Wilson. Do you think it was more about Russell Wilson? What kind of quarterback is Sean Payton getting in this 34-year-old version of Russell Wilson?
He's getting something that he knows. He's getting someone who's going to be a leader. You know, he's getting someone that has the ability to do it if you scheme it right. I do believe what you said, that Hackett was just in over his head. I don't think he knew how to handle it. And to me, it's like if you have a bad system, then, you know, he's not going to – you know, Russell Wilson's not going to be the guy to improve it. And the thing with Sean that's always been – he's such a great coach – is that he's got a great pulse on his team. He's like one of the guys, but he's also your coach. So he knows how to coach NFL players, whereas you mentioned Harbaugh. Harbaugh is a college coach. You know, Harbaugh cannot lead men. You know, I've always heard the word Harbaugh, like he's a bit cheesy. So it's like that's better for college ranks than it is for the NFL ranks, right? Where you're in college, you're sort of the leader and the boss. Whereas NFL, you're the leader and the boss, but also these are grown men with children. So you can't come at me like that because I'm not going to take your nonsense. And nonsense gets sifted out really quickly in the NFL, and that's how good teams implode. But no, and I think for Sean, man, geez, if you could resurrect a guy who had the worst seasons ever, that's going to be great for him. And he's done it before.
The other question I have for you, I mentioned this earlier, like when you were with the Saints and they won the championship in 2009, I thought, wow, this is a perfect marriage of coach and quarterback. And we are going to see them get back to the Super Bowl, maybe win another one or another two. And they never made it back to the Super Bowl. And I know, you know, what happened in the playoffs, a couple of the miracle in Minneapolis, the horrible non-call that went against them in the game against the Rams. And so they had some bad luck as well. But were you surprised that they never got back to the Super Bowl with Sean Payton and Drew Brees after you guys won it in 2009?
You know, they got there, but once you get to that level, you know, there's a little bit of luck involved with getting matched up with the right people, some calls going your way. And they just, man, they lost two heartbreakers. You know, the Diggs one and then the PI one. Those are crazy. Those are crazy, crazy plays that, you know, when they show playoffs and the magic that can happen, they're like the two right back to back. Plus, the whole Bounty Gate thing really kind of crushed New Orleans you know, because you know people had like Joe Vitt, I believe he had to sit out a year. He got, and he was like the motivational speaker guy. He was awesome. He was a great leader. You know, he ran scout team, ran the defense, you know, in practice. And so you lose guys, right? And it's like it's tough to build a nucleus. And every year truly is a new year. You know, every week is a new week. And if you lose some of those elements, the magic that's involved with that, then it's tough to come back from.
So you're a fan of the move. We'll see.
I am, man. It's a great move. Who else are you going to get, too? Right? Who
yeah,
else?
Yeah, I mean, they wanted, I mean, DeMeco Ryans or Harbaugh. But, yeah, I mean, Sean Payton's the only difference is you're giving up a first and a second-round pick to get him and giving back a third-round pick. But if it's the right guy, I guess, I mean, it's worth it, right?
In
retrospect, what would the Chiefs have given up to get Andy Reid? Anything? I mean, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
They shouldn't have given up anything if it's the right coach.
Okay, this I've got a question for you guys on this. Because I've long said I feel like the NFL is a coach-driven league, whereas like Major League Baseball is a general manager-driven league. You know, I think the GM is way more important in baseball, and the coach is way more important in football. I want a coach who gets to pick his GM the way that Andy Reid does, and Sean Payton. I'm sure like he's nobody's going to be his boss, right? But let me ask you this question: which is more important? Roster building or head coaching in the NFL if you want to try to win?
I don't think you can put a okay, here we go. You know, I think honestly, and it's like 51% to 49%, which so, only one of those is a prime number. Right?
Right? 49,
or they're
clearly.
both
no. Yeah, exactly. Roster building or the head
exactly,
coach.
49. Yeah, no, they're neither prime numbers, by the way.
The reason I ask is because
none of the above.
Right, exactly. No, I was kidding.
Quarterback's more important.
No, to me, honestly, is that.
But I'm
like,
putting that as
coach.
A part of okay, because I'm putting quarterbacks even as a part of roster building because we talk about the difference, like how much easier it is to win when you got a really good quarterback on a rookie deal, right? Mm-hmm. And then how it becomes a little more difficult if you got a great quarterback who's on an expensive deal. This coach is walking into an underperforming quarterback who's on a really expensive deal, which is a double whammy for your roster. And then they've given away like all of their draft picks from last year and this coming year. So like roster building is going to be a massive challenge
for
that team.
Right.
So like what I'm saying is like you can be a great coach, but if you don't have a good roster, ability to build a good roster, how far can you really get?
I don't know if it was Sean or Ryan Pace or Mickey Loomis in New Orleans, but what was that stat about Drew Brees has thrown to more undrafted free agents at wide receiver than like any quarterback alive? Like, I remember watching some games, they're like, oh, he just threw to some guy out of nowhere, double directional, as my father-in-law likes to say, you know, like a Northeast Missouri type, you know, school or something like that, some small school. So, I think roster building is important, but much like Brett Veach, I mean, just I think half the NFL teams, yeah, I think half the teams watch film and do scouting analysis on that, and half will go off Twitter mock drafts and draft that way. To be honest, because New Orleans always did well at drafting players and developing players. So I think if you've got a good coach that will develop and will look at your skill sets, that's Sean. I mean, how many flipping no-name wide receivers has Sean developed over the years with Drew Brees? But you also got to have that quarterback combination. Look at Belichick, wasn't jack squat before Brady, and vice versa, right? Look at Arians and Brady, right? Look at Drew and Sean, right? Perennial winners. But you have to have Andy Reid, Mahomes, right? You have to have this quarterback head coach relationship, and that really sets the tone. Look at injuries, but also 49ers. You know, you were limited, right? With you know your quarterback play, but you have to have that relationship.
I mean, this is all going to be put to the test for Sean Payton because, in my opinion, you have what is now a mediocre to maybe a slightly above mediocre quarterback with an albatross of a contract.
Oh man!
And a guy that his teammates really don't seem to like him.
Yeah,
he's not one of those guys. Well, oh, he's got the respect of all the locker rooms.
He does
like,
not.
No, he
does
not. And so, like you, all these different challenges. And I'm with you. of all the available coaches that you could get, Sean Payton, I think, is the best. But there are so many, like, built-in challenges that, like, okay, for instance, Drew Brees made a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
But the locker room loved him, didn't they?
Oh,
he had the respect, right?
He was our guy. He was our 100%, no question, our guy. He worked the hardest. He was a real human being. And like I said, that's the main thing is you got to be a real person. Because I guess you can get away with corniness in college, but as a player or coach, but in the NFL, man, that gets sussed out real quick. It really does.
And he was still a stud. He didn't have to depend on his legs. And like we don't know as Russell Wilson gets older, and once that aspect of his game is gone, as it's leaving him, what's he going to be when he doesn't have his legs? Or what's he? I mean, he's already losing his mobility compared to what he was, you know, 10 years ago. And so I feel like, boy, that's going to be an unbelievable challenge to try to get the most out of that quarterback because of what you're already having to deal with, like Nate explained. And then, oh, by the way, you've got Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes locking up this division, and that's going to be very tough for them to overcome, right?
Yeah, no, it really is. But like I said, I think Sean loves a challenge, and you know, you can be motivated. You know, your coach can. I think Sean could outweigh all the negativity with Russell and organize that locker room in such a way where I don't think any of these things with Russell would have gotten outed or, you know, would have gotten exposed had they been winning. If you win, who cares, right? Winning cures everything. But once you lose, you start looking at stuff and be like, you know what? This oatmeal does taste bad, right? You know what? Then this practice stinks, and this game plan stinks, and Russell stinks, and everything like that. So it's just, you know, it's like the snowball, right, that rolls down the hill and creates an avalanche, right? And if you win, then you're the person who's throwing your dynamite off the edge. You've already set off the avalanche. So there's no avalanche, right? So it smooths the rough edges. And when you lose, man, it's just everything sucks. Everything sucks. So once you start winning, everything goes away. All your problems go away. All your problems get glossed over.
That's the part, I guess, the reason, you know, because I asked that question. I think that you see great coaches understand the roster building part, and I'll bet you, I mean, Sean's obviously going to have a lot to say about the way they try to put that roster together going forward, but there was that year that Breeze really struggled and threw a ton of picks and everything, and it was because the Saints didn't have a running game. So Sean Payton and the Saints went out, and they put together a really good running game, and then all of a sudden he was playing back at like a Hall of Fame level again. And so he'll do what he can to put Russell Wilson in a position where he can have success. But I guess I just feel like he's inheriting a lot of problems. But I will say this, he's easily the best coach that Andy Reid's had to go up against in this division for quite some time, right? Yeah. We all agree with that, right, Steven?
Great personality.
Sure.
Honestly,
I just think he has too many other challenges to.
But that's the appeal. Sean has cemented himself. He's a Hall of Fame coach, right? He's done the things, won a Super Bowl, had one of the gutsiest calls ever at halftime of a Super Bowl to go do an onside at a flippin' Super Bowl when you're down, need to change it up. And so for him to be able to go to Denver and, you know what, I can turn this sucker around. And he can. Like, I believe in him. And if not, then he'll have someone on the roster who could step in and fill a need. You know, he can find another Taysom Hill and revolutionize the offense a little bit. You know, just get something going. And then, like I said, the main thing, whatever your game plan is, it's consistent. He's consistent. And then also, guys will buy in. I don't think guys were buying into the Hackett Russell Wilson chicanery on Wednesday when they're installing that stuff for the week. They go, I don't buy this. I don't buy this guy. I don't buy Russell. And like, was he a first year head coach? Right? How many years was he at Denver before he got canned?
Hackett?
Yeah, one, right?
That was it.
Under one year.
Make it 1 year.
So that tells you something else, too, that going on behind the scenes, there was a lot of turmoil. Like, there, I mean, you're fired in 1 year. Usually, you can go 0-for, right? You get a grace period. They got one, like, no, we don't like what we see. So there's some other stuff, too, going on. Maybe didn't have the locker room. And I think that's the thing.
I think it was the way they were losing, too.
Yeah.
You know, there's different ways to lose. You look completely unorganized on offense. The guy that you spent all this money on at quarterback is taking 10 steps back, and then they got blown out in a game where it looked like the whole team quit.
You're punting like the first six drives. I mean, that's
hard to survive
miserable.
All that.
That's miserable. If you can't sustain a drive, really, that's awful. But that was Russell Wilson, right? He was winning in Seattle 19-7 because they had the greatest home field advantage, the piped in noise, and killer receivers, one of them being, you know, Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, right? So, yeah, so that was the thing, too. So Russell's never – same thing with Aaron Rodgers, right? If Aaron Rodgers goes somewhere else, you've got great home field advantage and a killer defense, right, and great running game. So, and Aaron Rodgers ain't lighting up the scoreboard anymore either. So you gotta adapt, and I think the good coaches adapt. The good coaches say, let me build you a custom suit from what I know and what's good for you, and you can wear it and you can look good and our offense can flourish. Other coaches are like, hey, put on the suit I have. This is what I bring everywhere. And like, well, this doesn't fit. I can't move in this. This is terrible. The awkward fit, I don't look good. I don't play good. And so, yeah, that's what good coaches do. But yeah, it'll be scary.
We've got Nick Leckie in studio. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us. We have Nick Leckie in studio. So what did you think of that Chiefs victory in the AFC Championship game over the Cincinnati Bengals, Nick Leckie?
That was a good one. That was epic performance where, like, I didn't even bother, like, checking Twitter during that game because I was just so wrapped up in that. The action of it all, where it's like playoff baseball, where I'm like glued to every pitch, every play. I'm like, okay, what am I looking at here? What am I looking at there? And it's like I'm watching players and I'm seeing, you know, schemes and things like that. And it was dynamic, and you could tell Mahomes was immobile. And I love how you're always, you know, your quarterback always sets your personality, sets your tone. And I love how when he needed to, he ran. And he gutted it out. And, you know, your team gets behind you when you do things like that. You really do, man. Like, when he did the run and then the guy pushed him out of bounds, like, that was, gosh, that was awesome. Just kind of just took control. And it was just like he was missing, you know, his top three wide receivers, right? And he had Kemp and Moore is his wideout in MVS, right? And it's like, you know, when next up, man, you know, you haven't heard MVS name in a while, and all of a sudden, man, he's there, and he catches heat, like, catches fire like NBA Jam.
I feel like that's one of the underrated parts of leadership. You have spoken about Bill Snyder, and one of the things that made him so great was that he got the most out of every single guy on the roster, from the five-star recruit down to the walk-on that maybe didn't expect to play a snap. He made every single one of those guys feel like it's really important to the team that I'm at my best. And that's because it's the truth, right? And boy, was there ever a better example of that than in this game, when like everybody in the organization's role was important, from the trainer that puts together Patrick Mahomes' ankle rehab to Marcus Kemp, who's been working with Patrick Mahomes for years. Like, that guy, they needed him to be ready to go in the biggest game of the entire season. And I feel like Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes kind of set that. They treat every single person in the organization like they're really important, because they are.
Yeah, you do. Well, and that's good leadership, too. As you got people, especially as a quarterback, you have to be the mayor. You have to be the organizer. You have to be the tone setter. And it's like everyone's got to get love. You can't be big time and guys who are, you know, free agent rookies who are going to be, you know, maybe may not be here next year. You know, you're a family, you're a team, and everyone's got to be on board. Because it takes to win championships, you need the entirety of your roster to perform. And that was one of those time games, too, where, I mean, you go down. What other team do you think could lose what? How many? They lose three wide receivers?
Yes.
You lose three wide receivers.
And remember, Watson was inactive.
He's inactive, yeah.
Because because he was sick, and so that he was really one of their top four guys. So he was inactive. Juju leaves with the knee, and he could barely walk when he was coming up the tunnel, and he was in a lot of pain. So I'm concerned about him. But then Kadarius Toney tweaks his ankle, and then Mecole Hardman again with that pelvic injury aggravates that. So there's four right there that they were down.
Yeah, I mean, so you're down. How many other teams could flourish? So that means too, the defense had to step up. And I love how Chris Jones stepped up, right? And that's what it takes a complete team. And people forget that this defense has gotten some fumble sixes, some pick sixes to help this team win. And, you know, they've shown out throughout the season. So for a defense to step up the way they did and to limit Burrow, man, that was so fun to watch. And we got playoff Frank, Chris Jones finally getting his sacks in a playoff game, which was unreal because he was just took control. Like, now you're, like, thinking, okay, playoff performances, you know, Aaron Donald, Chris Jones. You know, Aaron Donald in that Super Bowl and Chris Jones in that AFC Championship game, man, that was relentless.
So I've been watching some of the breakdowns because there were some times when he beat double teams, you know, from his normal spot. But there were also a couple of those sacks where Spags did a pretty incredible job of scheming him up to a one-on-one situation against my guy, Hakeem Adeniji from the University of Kansas, hey, there's no shame in getting beat by Chris Jones.
What was he right tackle?
Right tackle.
Oh, he got worked.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, he did.
Oh, boy.
I like him. He was a really good dude, too, man. Like, and I'm proud of him that he's played in the NFL, but he got big boyed by Chris Jones a few times. But, like, I mean, Spags did some creative stuff. How much credit does he deserve for putting Jones in position to go make those plays?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely, man, because, you know, defense did a hell of a job, too. And then, how many injuries did defense have? Like, what, L'Jarius had, what, two snaps?
L'Jarius Sneed and Willie Gay.
Willie Gay goes down, right? You're like, oh, my gosh, like this. So you have that many injuries. Most teams fold. Like, most teams, you get, like, five injuries like that to, like, major contributors to your offense and your defense, there's no way in hell you're going to stop it. But that's one of those things, man. You know, you got guys stepping up. You got to know your schemes. You got to know your system. You got to know your players. And they did a great job, man. It was just so cool to see. And Chris Jones, man, you put him up. He's beating the left guard center. He's beating the right tackle. He's beating the right guard. I mean, they lined him up everywhere. And it was all this thing. Was it this year or last year when they tried him at D-end? Right, and it was like not last year. But it's like, you know what? Based off of that, now he's got that skill set. Now he can see what he can do in a defense versus an offense, and then that's what they relied upon. And it's like, okay, we're gonna I probably might use this too much, but he was like remember Jurassic Park when the Velociraptors were systematically testing the weakness in the fence when they're in feeding time. That's why they had to drop the cow in from the heli lift. He was a damn Velociraptor testing the system's weaknesses, and guess what? They were all weak. They were all weak. Every system was weak when Chris Jones was ISO'd or double-teamed. I mean, he beat the right guard so bad one time when he just gently put Burrow down. He beat the right tackle so bad when he's one-on-one. And, yeah, Spags gets a hell of a lot of credit because you lose two of your starters, your full day-one starters, and you still put a performance like that. This is amazing. This is absolutely amazing.
And then you factor in the number of rookies that are out there defensively, from Karloftis to all the guys that are in the secondary. And I mean, I know they went a stretch of time without him because he was injured, but Trent McDuffie is so good and also so physical, even though he's not a big corner, physical and willing to stick his nose in there and tackle. He got his hands on a couple of footballs, almost intercepted one.
Yeah.
I just for those guys especially, you know, for Watson and Williams and McDuffie and Cook to step up when they lose L'Jarius Sneed so early in the game, and that was a guy that was going to be predominantly responsible for covering Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, what does that say not only about Brett Veach and the talent I identified, but also the coaching staff for being able in this season to coach them up to the point where they lose their top corner, and they're able to absorb that and play well enough to beat an offensive team like Cincinnati in the championship game.
Well, I think, and you're right. I mean, give Spags more credit. You lose two guys, one early, super early. And the thing with corners and O-linemen are two of the most different body types, like on the athletic spectrum. You know, one is strong, one is not that weight room strong, one is fast, one isn't. But both positions on a long enough period of time will get beat. And both positions, when you're really good at your position, you never hear your name unless it's for a holding penalty. So it's like for him to have that, it's just like it's fantastic, right? To be a lockdown corner and, you know, to never hear him is so cool. And just the way he did it with where you have, you know, two guys who are stepping into roles as backups, you know, becoming essentially the guys where it's next man up. And I think, you know, credit to Spags for that mentality of I don't care who you are. You know, you step into this defense, you know what you got to do. And that's a product of drafting properly and assembling rosters and coaching them the right way, where you got, here's the system, here's what we're doing, follow it, and you're up next, I don't care, here's the expectations. And I think the great coaches, great managers, you elevate the expectations. Like, I had a coach in, you know, somewhere where he was like, all right, they brought six, we only have five, we're screwed. And I have another coach, Aaron Cromer in New Orleans, he's like, they bring six, we're blocking 1.5. And you're like, crap, I never thought about it like that. And then so you set those expectations high, then – and if you got the right people, the right systems, everything like that, you know, people rise to the challenge.
It almost seems like, so Spags has a couple of tendencies that we've talked about a lot since he took over as a defensive coordinator here. And those two things were at odds in this game. And I think it was kind of fascinating to see the way he decided to handle it, because he has not been super eager to play rookies, right? Like, we talked about how hard it was for Willie Gay to get on the field early in his career because he wasn't really picking things up as fast. Spags didn't trust him. Guys in the secondary that had a tough time getting on the field over Dan Sorensen because he trusted him more. Well, he had no choice this year because they got rid of some of those guys and then they replaced him with rookies. So he had to play some rookies. Then the injuries in this game compounded that. The other tendency, though, that Spags has had is he likes to blitz. He has a tough time just going, oh, I'm just going to trust my front four to get there. You know, he likes to blitz. I think he knew, I got five rookies in the secondary going up against this wide receiver core. I can't leave them hanging out to dry on an island. So he was kind of forced to trust his pass rush, and it worked. They got home. And he was creative with the pass rush, but they faked blitzes all over the place. Mm-hmm. But they didn't blitz that much in the game. I'm wondering if that gives him a little extra confidence going into the Super Bowl, like, hey, I don't need to blitz as much. I know it's a different offensive line. The Eagles offensive line is a lot better.
Gravy.
Than
top.
The, yeah.
Top one.
Are they the best?
As a unit.
Yeah.
As a unit.
So maybe that changes his mind, or maybe he has a little confidence like, yeah, I can get home with just those four guys.
It was amazing for me to see like the shutdown of the first and second down screens. I think that's something where you run a screen on third down, like, I hate you. I absolutely hate you. Like, that's just the most basic play call ever. And if it gets home, I hate you on defense.
Right.
So for him to shut down.
How could
down,
you fall for the banana in the tailpipe?
I know, right?
Yeah.
But to me, I think Spags also did a great job of not, they did not get beat by screens, because there were situations where it was like they appear to be walking down, they'd be coming into the line of scrimmage to blitz and then to back off or do some fakes, but they didn't get beat by the screen. And I think a lot of teams, Cincinnati's one of them, that will rely on that running back screen to counteract that aggression and say, hey, you know, no, we're not going to do this. We're not going to get beat. We're going to get you this way. So for them to shut down the running back screen game was impressive, because that would really stymied this offense, because this offense was throw the deep ball high, screen game, you know, hit your tight ends, right? It's pretty simple, and in downhill runs all day. So mm-hmm. they did a great job of shutting that stuff down, and it was stuff that would go unnoticed unless you watch the film, where it's like, damn, you know, like Cincinnati was gashing Buffalo with them downhill runs, and then didn't happen this time. And you lose your one of your best run stopping linebackers. So yeah, it's pretty cool to see the little things when I'll watch this game here in a little bit on the All 22 and then kind of, you know, take my notes and figure it out. But yeah, it was a beauty. It was beautiful to watch. It really was, man, from all the subtleties. And this would be the one game I'd say that Orlando Brown did not play well. And I'm a big Orlando Brown defender because he matches up well, but to a lot of guys. But this was one where I'm like, oh boy. It was like they kind of figured out like the glaring weakness, and it was like, put them wide and run them as fast as you can by them. You know, that's how you get by Orlando Brown. And it's like, okay, figure it out. But he did well. They did well.
We have, and hopefully we'll talk about those notes that you took and next week in the preview of the Super Bowl between the Chiefs and the Eagles. We'll take a break. One more segment with Nick Lecky after this on WHB. Marco, let's play the clip I just sent you from the latest episode of New Heights, the Kelce Brothers podcast.
How pissed are the Manning brothers that they're not the first brothers to do that? I forgot. I go, yeah, there really hasn't been many brothers playing in the Super Bowl at all. And I forgot about my favorite show on Monday night, which could be a lot better, I feel. I love it, but it could be a lot better.
You know, their guests make it great.
They do, but then, know, like,
Go ahead, Steve. You think it could be better?
It could be a lot better, man, because I think at one point, like, Peyton's trying to analyze the game and Eli's goofing around and I don't know, just, yeah, you're right, the guests do make it better, and it can be.
They could be in the same room, that might help.
That would help. I think that would help. They can't get together and do it from the same room? That's a good, look at Marco.
I just like it. Yeah, I just like it better than it. Troy Aikman and Joe Buck.
I mean, anything.
First of all, low bar to clear. But second of all, I like it. I like the Manning brothers. They're fun. They have a good rapport with one another. But dude, I don't know how you touch the New Heights podcast. I mean, that's a podcast. They can say more things and all that. But the Kelce brothers are incredible.
It's amazing.
Well, let's try to touch it right now. They were talking about the mayor of Cincinnati again.
Oh boy.
And, of course, Mayor.
Mayor Jabroni.
Can we get over this? Let's not keep harping on the mayor.
We're talking about it. Let's talk about it.
Why did that one get you so fired up?
Going to get a paternity test to see if Burrow is really Mahomes' father.
You shut the f*** up.
That was a little far.
Freaking weenie.
He's a mayor. He's just trying to get his city fired up.
You're right. He's a mayor. That's why you should know your role and shut your mouth.
Do you even know what a mayor's role is?
No.
Could you name me three responsibilities of a mayor?
Cutting ribbons with the giant scissors.
To get votes.
He wasn't even mad. He was like, well, yep, he got me.
Like, you know, did he really?
He was like, that's fair. Best of luck to you. It's pretty fair.
Well, nah, I respect him.
He took it well.
He can have fun. All right. You're not a weenie anymore. I take it all back.
They have the wildest brother rapport.
God, they're great.
They have the wildest brother rapport. It's so good. Like, that could be so much better than the Manning show. You know? Like, that could be, like, that right there. It's just better. They're more chemistry. Mannings don't feel like brothers. They feel like cousins politician. Twice removed or politicians. Yeah, that's what it is. Look at Marco with the gems.
That's future NFL commissioner right there, Peyton Manning.
Oh,
that's,
man. He's got the large enough head to do it. So
how about the fact that the mayor's no longer a weenie?
Right.
You earned his respect, you know? You take your medicine.
I'd be pissed. I'd be pissed if I was Cincinnati. Like, why is the mayor chiming in? Why is he clout chasing right now? Like, what are you doing?
He's writing checks that those players had to go cash.
Exactly.
Those players are writing.
Did trash talk ever make a difference to you either when you were in college or when you were in the pros, trash talk from the opposing team?
Anything. Any little bit of bulletin board material helps. It really does to give you that edge and kind of make you train harder. It's a weird thing to say, but yeah, trash talk helps. Like, it really does. Like, I hate to be this guy, but, you know, the Big 12 championship game where we beat dusted Oklahoma, I remember you watch ESPN and they say, this is the greatest team of all time and let's crown them and let's see this whatever. So yeah, 100%. As a player, you take every little bit of edge you can get and, you know, put every little chip on your shoulder and you extract it to the fullest, like a ninja blender. Like, let me squeeze all that juice out of that thing. You know, just get it. Why are they showing Scott Pioli on Good Morning Football? What the? Come on.
Because he's going to.
He's a regular.
Sorry.
He's going to break down how important quarterbacks are.
Sorry, I'm
sorry. He's going to tell you about how when he had Nick Sirianni as a wide receivers coach in Kansas City. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm sorry to break the flow. Like, I apologize.
I knew he had Super Bowl small potential in him.
Small child early on.
Right? Don't you think he'll say that? You
know, oh, yeah.
We had him in Kansas City and. He's been given more time.
That's all it is. It's just time. It really is time. Hey, Steve, I was talking to Nathan earlier. Does it get old talking about this Super Bowl for 2 weeks? Or is it hype because the Chiefs are there and there's so much malarkey?
No.
There's so much extraneous.
I'll be honest with you. It's impossible to ever get tired about talking to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl because I craved it for so long. Yep. I dreamt about it for so long. It's just, it's impossible. I can't talk about it forever, every day, plus an hour. I mean, I get it. It's a reasonable question to ask, but no.
I said the same thing, didn't
yeah,
I, Nick?
You
I
did.
Was like, hey, man, this is the Super Bowl, you know?
It just, it makes me so happy. I love it. I mean, yeah. I love it.
I guess the toughest part is the week or two after.
No, there's a bit, yeah, unless they win it, but then there's a big letdown afterwards, you know. But, you know what?
Just like Christmas.
I'm just glad it's happening, man.
Agreed.
We got to take it away from us last year, and we realized how much it meant to us, not to take it for granted. Now we're back, baby!
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Nick Leckie, for your time and efforts. We appreciate you.
Gracias.
Everyone, I hope you have a wonderful day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Goodbye.
The Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.